Handbells are one of those things that bring us joy, don't they? Don't they just bring you joy whenever they come around, especially this time of year? There's something about the ringing of those bells that just feels like Christmas to me. And this morning, we're going to talk about the question, what really causes you to rejoice? What does rejoicing look like? The scripture we read just a few moments ago, there's just joy and rejoicing all through it. You can kind of get the visual of what's going on there. You've got two expectant mothers gathered together, their cousins. Elizabeth, we know as the mother of John the Baptist, who would be the forebearer to proclaim that the Messiah was about to come onto the scene. And then you have the mother of Jesus, Mary, there, and they're greeting one another, and there is so much excitement and joy in that meeting that even John the Baptist, in his mother's womb, gets in on the rejoicing action. He is leaping in his mother's womb for joy. I think back to when we were expecting our kids and just the excitement that comes just from that moment of the kids kicking a little bit, sometimes trying to do some gymnastics routines. I mean, it is such a joy-filled moment in and of itself. But here in this story, the joy takes on a different meaning because it's a joy that leads to such promise and expectation. Such a powerful moment. I think about the things that truly bring me joy. I always love thinking about the things that have made me smile at Christmas time, looking back on memories and the joy of maybe a special gift being opened or the feeling you had on a particular Christmas morning, or maybe it's the sensation that you have when you gather in the full sanctuary for Christmas Eve and get to sing all your favorite carols together. And for me, it's hearing O Holy Night sung and then the lifting of the candles. I mean, so many things that bring me joy. And the older I get, I realize that I've kind of transitioned from looking for joy for myself, but I get so much more joy out of things that bring my kids joy. I love, our kids have such great personalities. Asher has this thing that he does where he'll tell stories and he'll get really excited about explaining something maybe that he saw at the store, and it goes something like this. It's like, Daddy, you remember on that Thursday and Grandmama was there and we were at the store and we saw that Stegosaurus and it was green, and at the time my favorite color was green and now it's black, but you know, we were there and I was wearing a red shirt and I like red too, and now that I'm seven, I don't like the colors I liked when I was 5 and a half. I mean, he'll just go into all this detail when he's telling a story, and I have no idea where he gets that from. I mean, it just amazes me to hear him get so excited when he's describing something. And then Everly Kate, we'll be trying to eat dinner, and she's dancing and singing and bouncing off the walls and just filled with so much joy. She's making up songs about the dog, about the food that she's eating, and it's just filled with so much joy. And again, we have no idea where she gets it from. And we see this, and it brings us joy. And I have to say, as a dad, the things that bring me joy are when I see my kids rejoice. That's what brings me so much hope and so much joy. And I was thinking about that as I was reading this passage and just seeing the joy and rejoicing that's taking place between Mary and Elizabeth in this story. And it got me to thinking, what is it that would bring God joy if he saw us in joy? What is it that would bring God a sense of rejoicing? As Zephaniah 3 says, rejoicing over us with singing. And I have to think that he would probably rejoice when he sees us rejoicing in what we're doing. And so the story invites us in to see not just a moment of a greeting and a piece of the narrative and unfolding of the story, but also to see what joy is really all about and how we are invited into the story. We get the greeting between them, and the story is Elizabeth is a few months further along than Mary, but Mary is expecting a child as well, and they gather together, and they greet one another, and while they're there, in verse 43, we are told that Elizabeth says to Mary, "Why am I so favored that the mother of my Lord should come to me? As soon as the sound of your greeting reached my ears, the baby in my womb leaped for joy." And what we see within this is there's a sense of surprise for Elizabeth. For one thing, Elizabeth was older in years. She wasn't even expected to have a child. She's expecting a child. She's expecting a promise. She has been surprised by this mystery of how this has happened. But then not only that, she is surprised that Mary is there bearing the child that would become the Messiah, that would be God among us through Jesus. And even that, she feels a sense of surprise at how favored she is to be there in the presence of the one carrying our Lord. And I believe that when we rejoice, we can rejoice when God surprises us. When God surprises us. Have you ever been surprised by God? Where there was something you weren't expecting, and all of a sudden God does something that is just amazing, and it brings you so much joy. I think back on experiences I've had over the years where God has done something that I was just like, wow, I had no idea that that even was possible to happen. I've been amazed just by so many things over the years. And earlier this year, I got the chance to be a part of something where God pulled together something pretty incredible, and it was filled with so much joy for those of us that got to be a part of it. I got to be a part of our first general conference for the Global Methodist Church back in September in Costa Rica. And the reason we met in Costa Rica was because we wanted to try and get as many people from around the world to be able to gather all in one place. So we picked a country where we felt pretty good about the security of the country, but also felt that we would be able to get in as many people as possible. Sometimes when you meet in the U.S., it's difficult for people of different nationalities to get visas. And so we looked at Costa Rica, felt like we had a favorable situation there. But as we got close to the event, we were a few weeks out, we realized there were a few people that just weren't going to be able to get in. And so we had to come up with this plan at the last minute where we would credential them and they would be able to join via Zoom and we would be able to integrate them into the conference. So there were all these details and logistics we had to figure out at the last minute. We had people working on the technology side of it. I was working on the credentialing side and the legislative side and then getting all the volunteers in place that would be needed to facilitate it and organizing with our translators. I mean, there were so many pieces that had to fall into place. But one of the biggest pieces that had to fall into place was we had to get these people connected. A lot of them live in remote villages in various parts of Africa. How would we get them to where they could have secure Wi-Fi? And so there were so many details that had to be worked out to get them to where they needed to be. And even the night before the conference began, the guy who was the CEO at the time of the Global Methodist Church, he said, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think they're going to get to where they need to be. I don't know that they're going to be able to connect. We've tried. We've done our best, but we just don't know. But then the morning, the general conference began. We flip on the screen. We log into Zoom. And all of a sudden, all these faces from five different countries in Africa begin popping up on the screen. And oh my goodness, I can't begin to tell you how surprised we were that we pulled it off, but how much joy we felt that we were able to include these folks in our conference who otherwise wouldn't have been able to participate. We had 30 people that we were trying to connect, and we got 29 of the 30 connected. And it was a moment filled with so much joy, and the few of us who were a part of it and had been pulling together the logistics at the last minute were high-fiving and hugging and just celebrating with so much joy how it came together in such a surprise. And there are moments when God does mysterious things and God brings together things that we thought that where there were so many obstacles and God makes a way. And it can be so powerful to see those moments when God surprises us. Here we have a story of a woman, Elizabeth, who is surprised even in her own ability at this advanced age to be able to bear a child. Not only that, we see the amazing promise and fulfillment and hope of Jesus coming, the Messiah, emerging onto the scene. And there is so much joy within the story. As we continue, the dialogue kind of goes back and forth between them, and we hear in verse 45, Elizabeth says, "Blessed is she who has believed that the Lord would fulfill his promises to her." I love that verse right there, that the Lord would fulfill his promises to her. That fulfillment, that hope, that longing, that everything is being realized in the fact that Jesus is being born of Mary. Mary responds, "My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God, my Savior." In other words, she is celebrating and rejoicing in the fact that God has indeed fulfilled what had been promised. And we get to rejoice when God fulfills. We rejoice when we see promises fulfilled, things we have longed for, things we have hoped for. Those are moments that inspire us and invigorate our souls to rejoice knowing that God has come through for us. And in this story, there's something very specific that has been fulfilled. There's something very powerful that has been fulfilled by the fact that Jesus is coming. And we jump down, and it goes through what we call Mary's Magnificat, which means to magnify or glorify or offer praise to God. And she's just rejoicing in what this fulfillment is going to look like. And we get in verse 50 a little bit of a glimpse into that. It says, "His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation." And it goes on, "He has performed mighty deeds with his arm, scattered the proud in their inmost thoughts." We hear that he has brought down rulers from their thrones, lifted up the humble, filled the hungry with good things. He's helped his servant, remembering to be merciful. All these promises, all this fulfillment, it's all about the redemption that comes through Jesus. God offering his redemption to the world through Jesus. And we get to rejoice that the fulfillment that is promised is God's redemption for us. We rejoice when God redeems. When we see redemption take place, that is the true joy and the fulfillment of what Jesus was supposed to come to this earth to be all about, that we would experience that hope and that redemption. And so Mary proclaims with so much joy, so much praise, magnifying, glorifying the name of God because of the redemption that has taken place and that will take place through Jesus. Such powerful words that we hear, and we get that image of the hungry being filled, the mighty being brought down, the rulers being cast down from their thrones, but the humble lifted up. In other words, this redemption is all about God's heart for the world, God's heart for his people, and making things all right. And for us, the way we are invited into the story is we are invited to read these words and to know that this is what Jesus coming to earth was all about. In fact, if we read all the way through Luke's gospel, we see this image that Mary proclaims of the Lord lifting up the lowly, the Lord lifting up the humble, filling the hungry, caring for those in needs, that is so much of what unfolds through the ministry of Jesus. And then what does Jesus invite us to do? He invites us to engage and to live out the things that he did in his ministry. In other words, we are invited to be a part of the redemption that is a part of God's heart. When I think about the things that bring me joy, I think about my kids and the things that bring them joy. And when I see them rejoice, I want to rejoice. And I believe that when God sees us partner and rejoice and engage in the redemption of the world, caring for the needs around us, that is when God truly rejoices, when he sees that we are living into his heart, we are living into his mission, and we are living it out in our lives. There's a story I always think about this time of year. We always have a few days each year, not a lot in Valdosta, but we do have a few days each year in Valdosta where it gets cold. And on those days, especially at night, I always think back on this story that I remember reading when I was in seminary about a lady who was a pastor in Chicago. And she described this experience of being in a board of trustees meeting in which they were debating the price of the cheese that they use for their homeless ministry. You know, just invigorating conversation. And it was a difference of a few cents. I can't remember exactly what the numbers were, but they were having this big debate about whether they should spend as much money as they were spending on cheese for their homeless ministry and the people that they are feeding. And as they were meeting, it was one of those really cold, frigid Midwestern nights where nobody wanted to go outside. And there they were in the warmth of this boardroom. And they're going back and forth, and people are emphatic. No, we need to care for the people in our community. We should spare no expense. And others like, yeah, but we have to watch the bottom line. And they're debating back and forth. And then all of a sudden, in the midst of their arguing over the price of cheese, someone breaks in with a moment of humanity and says, "Oh, can you imagine being on these streets tonight with how cold it is?" She said that in that moment, they paused. There was a moment, and everyone just sat there as it sunk in what they were actually meeting about and what really mattered. A few seconds passed, and they started arguing about the price of cheese again. But she said it was a glimpse into realizing what it was that God had called them to be. God had called them to be, we might say, to be a part of the redemption of the world, to care for those who needed to be cared for, to lift up those who needed to be lifted up. At this time of year, there are so many people in need of redemption. There are so many people who are in need of hope. There are so many people in need of being lifted up. It might not just be those physical needs that we think about. It might not just be the things that we think about where we go and care for those who otherwise might be without. But there are those who just simply need a measure of hope that they otherwise might not receive unless we extend that to them. I think about people I've met in our church, and every once in a while I'll be talking to somebody. How did you become a part of our church? Well, I was invited to a Christmas Eve service. I came here for a Christmas Eve service and then eventually started coming each week. It's so amazing how people might be open to what God might do in their life at this particular time of the year. And I believe if we want to see God rejoicing, if we want to experience joy and really experience the fulfillment of it and the fullness of it, we are invited to be a part of God's redemption of the world and living into that and offering the hope to those of us, to those around us who are in so desperate need of that hope and that love. And so as we close this service, as we prepare for Christmas in just a few days, I want to invite you to be a part of joy, to be a part of the rejoicing, and let us live our lives in such a way that we bring rejoicing to God as he looks at us and sees us taking part of the joy of being a part of the redemption of the world.